put on your new kicks and pants for this episode of Nani's Tune with Avery and Lena.
One of my favorite lines in a song.
That's why I went with it.
Or one that makes me laugh. Let's put it that way. Fresh new kicks. Like, I don't know. Or when I wear my shoes and they're old, are they like rotten?
Old rotten kicks? Yeah. Just like you.
Anyway, if anyone doesn't know, I don't know where you've been. We're doing MC Hammer, You Can't Touch This. Can't touch this. I wasn't going to sing the music because somehow I almost always mix it up. I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah, I was excited to do this. Our 100th episode.
Yes, it is. It is our 100th.
Not why I chose it, because I wasn't aware of that at the time, but I think it's very fitting. One of the biggest songs of the 90s.
Yeah, I would say so. It kicked off the 90s because it was released on May 28th, 1990.
Oh, well, now I have different stuff. One source said January 13th it was released. The album was February. And I have an April 1990, and you have May. So who knows? But I will say he did sing it on the Arsenio, or perform it on the Arsenio Hall show in 1989 before it was, the album was released. Yeah, he was good friends with Arsenio.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, me either, but that's what my research has come up. There's a lot of research on. I had to pare it down. there might be gaps because I had to pare it so much. Let's start with his name.
Okay.
Because does anyone know his name? Like, do you? You might have
I saw it earlier because I also saw Rick James' real name.
Oh, okay. What's his real name?
I didn't write it down. So,
because Rick James could be a name, but MC Hammer, we're pretty sure not his birth name. And for sure, because it's Stanley Kirk Burrell, born in 1962 in Oakland. You'll see a lot of Oakland A's stuff in his videos.
Yeah. I know he talks about Oaktown or.
Oh, yeah. He says when he was a kid, like, he would dance. He would catch fly balls and sell them outside of Oakland A's games. And he would dance with a beatboxer. And then the owner saw him as, some say a bat boy, some say as a clubhouse assistant. And his brother was the bat boy. And when he was 11, this is where he got his name, because apparently some players, Reggie Jackson might be one of them, a couple claim it. So said he looked like Hank Aaron, whose nickname was the Hammer.
Okay.
Which I didn't know that was his nickname, but he went to McClemens High School. Also, who went to McClemens was Brandon Smith of the Calgary Stampeders. And I'm not going to stop there. Dante Marsh of the BC Lions. Very Canadian connection, but there's a Pamela Anderson connection here because she was discovered at a BC Lions game. Do you know this story?
No.
A cameraman saw her in the crowd. They put her on the screen. They took her down to the field. She got an ovation. Labatt signed her as a model a couple months later.
Oh.
Playboy. And then from there.
On to our podcast.
Yes. Regular
podcast
discussion or topic on our podcast. So he was like in bands and rapped. And then he joined the Navy for a little while. And then he was like, for I think 3 years. By 1986, he was known as MC. He went by MC Hammer. He had one album, actually, and then his third album. Like, he was up there, but maybe locally he was known, but always doing stuff.
Yeah.
And then his third album is Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him, which was recorded on a modified tour bus for like $10,000. As he was touring, he was recording this album. Well, and that's Can't Touch This, but we'll come back to that. Too Legit to Quit was in 1991. Have you looked up that video?
I've probably seen it, but I forget it.
It's a really expensive video. There's a lot of cameos. There's like New Kids on the Block, Milli Vanilli, Danny Glover, Rick James plays a big part. And at the end, there's a Michael Jackson spoof where it's the sequin glove doing the...
I think I remember that part.
I knew that part. It was 14 minutes of my life. Not as good as He Can't Touch This video, because it's not, like, it was dated, so that's just all. He spent so much on this, it might have contributed to his bankruptcy. I don't go too much into them, because I guess he filed for bankruptcy, but wasn't down and out. Like, when you're so rich and have so much money and you file for bankruptcy, it doesn't mean you get no money and you don't have, like, a house and down and out. And he's built himself up. He He's always been like releasing singles, is up to 2017. He had way more albums. He produced, he signed with Death Row Records. He was there from 1995, 96. Around that time, he was known as Hammer, but he's since gone back to MC Hammer. He's played shows. He played one with Vanilla Ice. He did a version of Too Legit to Quit with Psy at the time. He actually produced a lot of people, but what I remember most is for Deion Sanders. When he had an
Deion?
Album. Deion Sanders?
Deion?
Deion? What did I say?
Deion?
Oh, I thought I said Deion.
Maybe okay. It did. It just sounded weird.
Okay. He's into racehorses. He, like, makes money that way. He was a tech mogul. He did a lot of tech things that are above me. So, still kind of around. Still kind of doing his thing. He was mocked for a while. I think now he's respected. He was mentioned in some rap songs. But I think he's, overall, I think he's respected now.
Good. Yeah.
So we'll.
As he should be. When you put out a massive hit like this, there should be a lot of respect that comes along with it.
A lot of people are like, oh, he's just like a sellout. This isn't rap. I will say, I would put this under dance pop rap. Like, so.
I think this is the beginning of the change into the 90s for rap.
Yeah, like hip hop, kind of more maybe radio friendly.
Yeah.
Not so gangster, which is part of the 90s too, but that wasn't like radio friendly stuff. So there was so much merchandise around this, like lunchboxes, dolls.
I think I remember seeing somebody with a lunchbox.
That's awesome. Mattel dolls. And in the Too Legit to Quit video, there's two guys waiting, like two boys waiting for the concert, and they're holding MC Hammer. Also, I'm just going to go on a little aside. MC Hammer pants, kind of copied from Harem pants, which
I researched this as well. I don't do much research, but I'm like,
yep.
I had to look up how much parachute pants would cost.
Oh, okay.
But I saw that parachute pants were sort of different than these pants, so.
But I'd say they had their, like, Harem pants were the precursor.
Yeah, they were brought into Western fashion by Paul
Poirot?
Yeah, Poirot.
He was French. Yeah. Sorry, French
Around
people.
1910.
Yes, French fashion designer.
Yeah.
Also, I went a little more that doesn't matter to anything. He may have been responsible for the hobble skirt, which I didn't know what a hobble skirt was, so I had to look that up. So it's like long skirt that women would wear in the night. This was very short-lived because you couldn't move, but like in the around that time of harem pants, early 1900. It was tied almost around the ankles. Like, how could you move like that? That's why it was short-lived.
Odd, yeah.
But why they were a thing, I guess a fashion designer, some say it was him, it's kind of debated, was there to witness the Wright brothers doing a demonstration, and a woman asked for a ride in the plane, and so her skirt didn't blow up. She tied it around her ankles. And yeah, it was not a very, it was short-lived. But anyway, yeah. But I had harem pants in the 1980s, which are different than the 1910s harem pants because they weren't like ballooned out when you look. Based on like Asian like culture pants too, kind of taken from there. But yeah, I had some just kind of tapered at the ankle before parachute pants, before MC Hammer. It was like
so
just kind of
like
big.
Ahead of the trends here.
Or yeah, maybe.
Maybe
but,
you're a trendsetter.
But a little different than his pants. Yeah. So there's me being cool.
Never say that again.
Everyone knows it samples Super Freak by Rick James
in
1981. Did you watch that video this morning?
No.
Oh, I couldn't help but watch that video this morning. It's a great video. I thought it was a 70s song. Well, no, when you see that video, you're like, oh, it's for sure the 80s. He has glittery hair. You've probably at least seen a snippet of it somewhere.
Yeah.
It's kind of, look that video up. It's kind of amazing. I guess at first he wasn't credited. But after complaining, he was given writing credits for you can't touch this.
Uh-huh.
Fair enough. I mean, that's especially part of what makes it so big, is that.
Yeah, sample. Yeah. Mm. Well, before you go, I'm going to bring up my Canadian connection.
Yep.
Because, as you stated, Rick James, or James Ambrose Johnson Jr., as his real name is.
Ambrose is his last name?
No, middle name. James Ambrose Johnson Jr.
Oh, Johnson. Sorry. Yeah.
So, like you said, credited on writing part of this song.
Mm-hmm.
He was interesting when he was younger. He was in the U.S. Navy Reserves. But to avoid being drafted, he moved to Toronto.
Huh.
Where he started a band. And the song that you heard me listening to earlier was from that band, the Maya Birds. And they were formed in Toronto. And they had other people. There were other people in this band. They didn't have an album. They were signed to a record label. They only had the single. And other band members included Neil Young.
I was going to say that as a joke because I do not associate those two. But okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Bruce Palmer, who was in the band Buffalo Springfield after this.
Okay.
Goldie McJohn, which sounds like a made-up name. But he was a keyboardist in Steppenwolf. And Nick St. Nicholas, who was also in Steppenwolf. Like, this band had a lot of members coming and going.
Okay, yeah, one of those.
And they were only, like, from 1964 to 1967. So that short span, but I think there was maybe a lot of going on in Toronto at that time, with probably a lot of bands being formed and a lot of experimental music. Like, you look at, like, Buffalo Springfield or Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Steppenwolf was very, I'd say, experimental for that time. Like, that feedback on the guitar through the amps and stuff like that. Just that's what strikes me about Steppenwolf. And, you know, they played some pretty good music. And
yeah,
that's all I have about it.
You said you heard me listening to that earlier. Our listeners weren't there for that. What were you listening to earlier?
Oh, their one single. And it was called The Maya Bird Hop.
Oh, I didn't hear you listening to that.
No. Oh, well, maybe. Well, I listened to it.
Well, go listen to it. I'm not always aware of what you're doing, Eve. Sorry.
Yeah. But they were signed to Motown as well. So it's just like very interesting.
I heard you listening to It's My Life by No Doubt.
That came on like after.
Okay. And then what that song was based on. So that's where I thought you were going. Okay. That's my research, but let's get into the song.
Okay.
I had the CD. Well, tape. I had the tape. I don't quite remember it, but I remember Have You Seen Her, which is a remake of High Lights, I think. Yeah, I remember. I don't remember listening to the tape a lot, but I had it. The song was everywhere at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a
great... Much music. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, on the radio, at school dances, everywhere. I think it kicked off the 90s if it was January 13th, like I read in one source. It kind of a change for the 90s when you think, you're right, like from rap to like dancey stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of dance, CNC Music Factory, and then like...
Snap.
Yep. The Real McCoy. But that kind of genre, like dance. Yes. Yeah. I watched this video expecting to cringe and love the cheesiness of it. But except for their clothes, it was not a cheesy video, I think.
No. It was just like a lot of dancing around, like that sidestepping dance, mm-hmm. which is pretty awesome.
Running Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I found, yeah, because it was a lot of dancing and just, they do go up the stairs at one point. You have to be kind of outside some sort of industrial thing for it to be the 90s. But yeah, their clothes, cheesy. But the dancing... Amazing. Like that took away from any of the cheesiness of the clothes, I thought. Dancing.
Yeah.
There is, the cheesiest is like their clothes when they, it's kind of like black and white, but then they make the clothes more neon.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded me, I had an outfit probably around this time, probably a little earlier, probably more in the 80s leading in the 90s. That was bicycle shorts that had a neon stripe on the side, maybe pink. I had a neon shirt that was maybe green, and I forget the exact colors, but they were all different, and I had a fanny pack that was neon, maybe orange, and I wore it all together. Don't remember my shoes. Probably like cheerleading shoes kind of things, but yeah, I had that. I didn't wear it often. Actually, that would have been grade 5. How old was I then? Carry the
17.
Two. Yeah, but anyway, I kind of loved this video. I loved, he's... charismatic for sure. His dancing is kind of great. I love when he's dancing and the stage kind of goes down and he's dancing like kind of like at knee level for them and he's dancing down there and then jumps up again. That's kind of cool. Yeah. For some reason, when I think of his dance, I also can picture, you know, the little like this, you're going to think, what are you getting at? And I don't know what I'm getting at. You know, in Mario, those little like guys, you step on their head and they're like, they get smaller. Those little, are they monkeys? They're not monkeys.
The mushrooms?
Yeah.
Koopas?
Maybe they're mine.
No, they're not Koopas.
But for some reason, I think of them. I don't know why. I think because in my mind, I equated him dancing and going really low with, my brain at the time didn't realize he was going underneath, like he was stepping down. And I just, because he gets smaller. And I always had this like connection in my brain. I don't know the name.
Goombas.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why, but I think because just... where they shrink and you step on them and they get smaller. And when he jumps down on the platform, I've always made that connection. I don't know. Did you like the song at the time?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I mean, I think there was a time, even if you liked it, you hated it because it got so overplayed.
So overplayed for me was a little bit different at that age because I don't think I would have had control of the radio that much.
Mm-hmm.
And... was it on our radio? I probably saw it more on, say, Much Music or something like that.
Oh, okay. It's kind of funny when you say didn't have control of the radio. I had a radio in my room, but I didn't have control of my parents' radio because they only listen to country in the car.
Yeah.
Country. So
we only had two stations. One was an oldie station and one was whatever they played.
Okay. We had at least three. There was an oldies. There was country, and then there was, like, mainstream, I guess, but yeah.
Okay.
But it was, no matter where you heard it, it was everywhere. And I do think it got overplayed. He lost some credibility because it was in your face. And then again, it's like, yeah, this is a good song. This is, there's something about him. He is just charismatic. He is pretty.
Yeah, and I think it still holds up, too, though.
I'm glad I revisited it and listened to it a little closer instead of just, like, kitschy and catchy. I think it's more than that.
Yeah. Like I said, it holds up. So it's more than just that kitschiness to it. It's still a good song to this day.
Mm-hmm. I think his rap is pretty good. Like the actual rapping and with the catchy dance-iness. I think it is. It wasn't just rap. I consider it more of a dance song. He dances.
Yeah.
He's known for dancing.
Yeah,
so.
Like a rap, pop, hip-hop. Yeah.
So to make fun of him for his rapping, like for selling out rapping, that's not what he was all about. He was about the whole show.
Yeah. Well, even when he went on tour, there were so many people with him. It was like a traveling circus almost, like with the amount of people, like backup dancers, the band. Because it wasn't just like a guy pressing a button in the background. It was, he had musicians with him and supporting acts. Vanilla Ice was a supporting act at one time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then he left the tour to do his own headlining tour. Hmm.
And I read that everyone made it up, like there was some feud and stuff between these guys, but there wasn't. They just pitted them against each other because like popular rappers at the time, that there wasn't really a feud.
Rivalry?
Yeah. Just the media just kind of...
fueled it.
Yeah. Great song. Pretty happy. 100th choice. Well, not quite, but you know.
Yeah. So it did reach number 8 on the Canadian Top Singles charts and number 1 on the Canadian Dance Urban songs. I'm surprised it didn't reach number 1 on the Canadian singles. I don't know who would have been number 1 at that time, and I'm not going back to look right now.
We can look it up, but yeah.
Yeah. But it did go gold in Canada, so 50,000 albums sold, and it was released on mini CD in Japan.
Oh, mini CD.
But that's all I have. So what are we doing next? Oh, my God.
It's
my
your
pick.
Choice.
I did not pick.
I don't know why you're asking me. I can pick something.
We are going to go with More Than Words by Extreme.
I'm thinking of that song lately. I can't argue it. Well, we'll listen to that for a week.
Yeah, it's something different. We'll get more into that next Saturday when we talk about this. So
yeah,
keep on listening.